KGB Radio, March 4th, 2006, Super Bowl Bruin, Part 2.
Welcome to KGB Radio. KGB Radio is here to help you make better beer at home. Learn the latest tips and techniques from the award-winning comrades of a homebrew club in Houston, Texas called Kirkendall Grand Brewers. I'm your host, Comrade Brian Ellis. Today is March 4th, 2006, and this is our third episode, Part 2 Super Bowl Brew-In. The day before Super Bowl, I believe it was February 4th, 2006, we as a group from the KGB, the homebrew club, got together and brewed up at the local homebrew shop we always go to, which is the Brew Stop, owned by Ken Rich. Episode 2 was our Part 1 to our Super Bowl Brew-In. This will be Part 2. We had three interviews of current KGB members. Our discussion was on cleaning and sanitization. This episode, Part 2, will be another interview with two individuals, prior officers of the KGB. Again, continuation on our cleaning and sanitization topics. Before we do that, I want to talk about what's happening in Brian's brewery. Brian just got finished brewing with Tim White. Tim and I brewed a American Pilsner. This is the Pilsner that actually I was going to brew with him, and we were going to use the yeast for a 10-gallon batch a couple Saturdays ago. Unfortunately, Tim couldn't brew that day, so I went ahead and brewed a 5-gallon batch, and basically it was just a big work starter. We got our ample yeast to pitch our 10 gallons this Saturday, and it actually we brewed Friday night, which is great because it doesn't really bite into the weekend. But anywho, we ended up with a gravity of 1050, which our target was 1046 to 1048. I can tell you that's pretty typical whenever Tim and I brew. We always overshoot our yield, and we actually try to cut back on our grain. Our grain bill was approximately 17 pounds. I believe we also put in 1 pound of rice flakes as well as a half a pound of Vienna. And we wanted to use a half a pound of Munich, but the shop was out of stock. The fermentation kicked off pretty quick. By the next day, both of them were fermenting vigorously, so we were able to bring that temperature down to the appropriate fermentation temperatures. We started at about 65, and by the next morning, we actually brought it down to about 58, 57, something like that. The third day in, it'll be probably around 52. The lager I brewed 2 weeks ago is in the secondary right now. I'm actually using a 5-gallon keg as opposed to a 5-gallon carboy in order for it to fit in my fermenter box. It's a good problem when you have too much beer. Off in the war room, want to talk about a couple competitions coming up. If you go to beertown.org, you'll be able to see a listing by month of all the homebrew competitions coming up. The Blue Bonnet is going to be the 17th of March. The Brew Off actually is that weekend. Also in March, March 11th, is the World Cup of Beers. That's in California. And then Sam Adams' holiday homebrew competition is also in, I believe, in March as well. And on May 20th, 2006, is AHA's homebrew competition for clubs only. Apparently it's on extract beers. I thought this might be something interesting for our club to be involved with, or any other homebrew club. Okay, and off to some beer news. I thought I'd throw in a couple tidbits of interesting things and artifacts that I found online. Specifically, craft beer sales have soared. Smaller brewers celebrate 9% growth. That's awesome. Apparently, wine and spirits growth is not as much, but in 2005, compared to 2004, as well as 2003, the craft brewers sold 9% beer, higher than the year before. And for our health nuts out there, studies have shown that hops are good for the heart. Study finds beer has anti-inflammatory effect. Extracts from beer reduce inflammatory markers, according to a study by the Australian scientists. Hops may play a particular important role. Tell that to your significant other next time you make homemade beer. And another bit of information, American Craft Beer Week. Association urged drinkers to visit your local brewery May 15th through the 21st. American Beer of the Month has been laid to rest, replaced by American Craft Beer Week. The Brewers Association, which staged American Beer Month, celebrates each July beginning in 2002, announced this launch for Beer Week. So
that week. Let's go and, I guess, around Houston, not too many, but I will definitely have a couple St. Arnold's and swing by Two Rows, as well as BJ's. So make sure you support your craft brewers. Okay, I always want to support other podcasts that I listen to, and hopefully they listen to us as well. I've really been turned on to Craft Beer Radio. Two guys, Jeff and Greg, taste beer, and it's a real enjoyable podcast. I listen to it on my iPod in my hour and a half way to work. I also listen to Basic Brewing Radio with James Spencer. Basic Brewing Radio has actually, I was fortunate enough to be on his program. It's very enjoyable, and I've learned a lot from him, as well as other podcasts listening on how their techniques and how they put this stuff out there for you guys to listen to. So go out there and check out those podcasts, those websites. I have links on KGB Radio. Go to kgbradio.blogspot.com, and you'll be linked to those two programs as well as others. Alrighty, a couple other things before we move forward to our interview on remote site. Our KGB meeting is going to be coming up very soon, March 11th, at Rob's house. It's going to be our chili cook-off. And then April 15th is at Carl Scott's house, and we're going to be doing a crawfish boil, the annual crawfish boil. It's always a fun thing to do, and if people that don't like crawfish, they still have a good time because we have beer. Let's go ahead and move on out to the field and listen to some interviews with Don Saja as well as John Yachty. Enjoy.
Well, we're back. We're back with Don Saja. How you doing, Don?
Excellent, Brian.
Wonderful. Don Saja is a prior czar. He was a czar for 2 years, and he also was our commissar brewski for 2 years, correct?
Correct. But the proper title is has-been czar.
Has-been czar. Yeah, has-been czar. That's what we call when you were a czar, and I guess I'm a has-been czar as well. That's right.
Title to be proud of, HBC.
Absolutely. When you see that means you've been through the ranks, so to speak.
Paid your dues and then some.
Paid your dues and then some. Well, again, welcome. And today we're going to talk about sanitization and cleaning techniques. We've talked to a few other KGBers that are brewing today. But before that, I'd like to get a little bit more about what was your first beer that you made and your history with the KGB.
Well, back in, I think it was the Christmas of 1993, many of us were avid beer drinkers, and we all wanted to dabble with this, you know, homebrew, this new concept of homebrewing.
Right.
So sure enough, under the Christmas tree that year, Santa left me the base homebrew kit bought from actually DeFalco's North back then.
Right.
And it came with a canned recipe of a Bock beer. Of course, it had a little can. It said
yeah.
Bock, and it had a little German guy on there, a picture of a German guy. So I went ahead and followed the instructions and made this Bock with this ale yeast.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, back then I didn't know anything about yeast or about beer styles. I mean, beer styles were a new
thing. What were you drinking at that time, though? What were you, drinking?
I was probably drinking Corona. I was probably drinking Miller Genuine Draft.
So we all came from those roots.
Yeah. Probably an occasional Löwenbräu or another German beer, but I mean, back in '93, the availability of beer was, there just wasn't anything available.
Right.
What I enjoyed though was I travel a lot, so I guess it was 1994 when the first brew pub was made in Austin, the Waterloo Brewing Company.
Yes.
And sure enough, I was exposed to two of my personal favorites back then was a raspberry American wheat beer. And a one-ton Russian stout.
Oh, my goodness. And you were hooked ever since?
I was hooked ever since. As a matter of fact, I think my second batch of beer was a stout. My mm-hmm. seventh batch of beer, which I'm probably one of the most proud of moments, was a one-ton stout.
One-ton.
And Ken talked me into entering into the Dixie Cup back in, it must have been 1994.
Mm-hmm.
And the Dixie Cup was something... I had no idea what
the homebrew competition.
Homebrew competition. It was held off of Holiday Inn off of I-10 somewhere on the west side of the city.
Right.
Anyhow, we go to the awards ceremony that second night. You know, here's guys that have been brewing for their whole lives.
And, it seems that way.
Sure enough, they announced that Don Saja won third place, and you know, I thought, wow, this is really cool, you know.
Right.
So, that was the ribbon I probably remember most in winning.
Yeah, very, and very I remember my first ribbon. My first ribbon was when I entered also in the Dixie Cup for Brown Ale, and I got a second place ribbon for that.
Excellent.
And it was the first year. No, it was the second year I entered in that competition, and I was floored. I couldn't believe it. I was only brewing for about a year and a half. And I got
probably
a ribbon. Probably
because you follow good sterilization properties.
Well, there you go. That's a good, very good segue. Well, before we get into sterilization, sanitation, and all that, of course, there's a difference between sanitation and sterilization. We actually sanitize. We don't sterilize because we just don't have the equipment to do that. But as far as joining the KGB, you started brewing about 94, 93.
Yeah, I was brewing for probably about 5 years.
And then the KGB started about 94 or so.
Correct.
Okay. Were you a member of any other clubs?
Well, ironically, I joined the Foam Rangers probably about 1995, primarily to get
I think we're about to have a KGB raffle.
This is a good opportunity to take a slight small break.
That's right. What we're doing right now at the Super Bowl Brew-In is a KGB raffle, and we do this generally at our meetings. This is just a brew-in. It's not necessarily a meeting. But what's interesting about it is there's probably a lot less people here than a KGB meeting, and we are really excited because probably everybody's going to win something. I'm sitting here looking at my raffle ticket. I'm number 203, 726203, and I'm hoping I'm going to win something. Looks like there's some hops to give away and some T-shirts, and let me see. It looks like some brewing coupons or some kind of coupons. So when we come back, I will let you know. We'll continue our conversation with Don, and we will let you know if Don or myself or anybody else won anything. Hold tight. Well, unfortunately, neither Don or Brian, we did not win a raffle item, but it was very, very exhilarating and fun. And Tim White, the Ruble Collector, did a phenomenal job.
Excellent job.
Excellent job. The Czar, current Czar, Ed, we spoke earlier with, he just brought over me a beer. And to be honest with you, I don't know what kind of beer it was. Did you see what kind of beer
it was,
that he poured?
Breckenridge Christmas Ale.
Oh, okay. Well, it's a little early for Christmas, I guess.
Christmas can come more than once a year.
Yeah, that's right. It's Christmas every year when you're home brewing.
Exactly.
Well, Don, let's continue our conversation. I believe we left off talking about the KGB when you joined.
Sure.
And
okay.
you were a member of the Foam Rangers, I believe.
I joined the Foam Rangers primarily to get the 10% discount on ingredients.
Sure.
As you know, that there's lots of reasons for one to join a club.
Right.
And I think for me, that was it. I've never attended a meeting. I don't think I attended any of their functions to get the 10% discounts.
Yeah.
And then I think that lasted for a year, and I just stayed as an independent home brewer till about 1999. And of course, I came up here a number of times, and Tom Bickle at the time
came here
a long time. And ironically, Tom Bickle was working here part time.
Mm-hmm. Remember that?
And he just kept grilling me. Well, how come you don't join? You know, you know, you're an avid home brewer. You obviously are decent at your craft.
Yeah.
So I think there was a meeting coming up a few weeks later. Maybe it wasn't even that weekend. So I came up and I met Dean Dobo, Tom Bickle, David Deal.
David Deal was there.
Those were the three guys I ran into first. And, you know, obviously first impressions mean a lot. And
sure.
Very friendly, outgoing people. And I thought, oh, this is kind of a nice group of people. You know, you talk about beer, you drink beer, you discuss beer, and it's kind of an interesting concept. It's not like, you know, you don't talk about work, you don't talk about the problems at home.
Don, that's an interesting point. You know, that's one thing about brewers, particularly in our group of homebrew brewers of the KGB and other homebrew clubs in the Houston area, is you can get a huge amount of vast amount of occupations and diversity come together, and we always have a good time.
Mm-hmm.
Whether, you know, it doesn't matter what your political preferences are, your sexual preferences are, it doesn't matter. You just get a group of people together, and we really enjoy ourselves.
Sure.
And
connect
a good time.
Common link beer.
It's a common link, and that's what it is. It's a common link of beer. So, well, sanitization.
Okay.
How do you sanitize and clean your equipment, and why?
Well, the why is real simple. I obviously, if you don't want to have any type of foreign yeast or dirt,
bacteria,
or scum bacteria, yeah. anything that can infect your beer, because obviously that's one of the more critical issues. You know, the yeast comes in and, you know, basically converts the sugars into you know, fermentable into an alcohol.
Mm-hmm.
You can't be. Well, let me try to phrase this properly. I'm not a fanatic about it, but I always clean my equipment after. I clean it before. I try to be extremely careful. I use Idafor as a sterilizing agent. Matter of fact, in terms of a cleaning agent, Zar-Ed showed me a product you could buy at Walmart for about $1.70. It's ideal for stainless steel surfaces.
Yeah, he mentioned that earlier.
And it escapes my memory right now what the product is. I wrote it down, but I looked at his stainless steel kegs.
Oh, it's called Bartender's Friend. That's what it is.
And, you know, I looked at his kegs, and they looked brand new on the inside. So,
wow.
I think this week I'm going to pick some of that up because my kegs are starting to show some age.
Sure.
But,
you're talking about your boiling kegs and your
no, just
beer
my,
kegs?
Just my boiling kegs.
Boiling kegs.
Yeah. In terms of cleaning agent for my carboys, it's the standard TSP.
Yep. Right.
And I've had
TSP
it
works
success.
Real well. Do you? One of the things that I do is particularly in my kegs is I heat up and boil water,
okay,
and let it cool down about 180 degrees or get it up to 180 degrees, and then I pour that boiling water in the kegs themselves right before I'm going to go ahead and keg my beer.
Okay,
and then I just shake it up a little bit, let it sit in there for 15 minutes or so, and then I put a picnic tap on it. And,
okay.
and just push that with CO2, and sometimes the pressure of the heat, just you have enough pressure and it pushes that on its own.
Okay.
And it goes, all that hot comes out and it touches everything that the beer's going to touch.
Sure.
So that's worked out real well for me. That's another technique that I've used.
Oh, that's an excellent idea. And ironically, even though I've been brewing for 12 years, I...
First time you heard that?
Well, I keg very, very little.
You're right.
I'm a bottle conditioning type of guy.
Right.
And, that's just... I guess just my own philosophy. You know, kegging it obviously so much easier, but
right.
I very rarely keg.
Yeah, and that's a great discussion in the future, because whether you keg or bottle, you know, why does one brewer do one or the other,
sure,
and what's the pros and cons and all that?
That'd make an
Let me mark
discussion.
That down. That might
sure.
be another discussion
okay.
for our next podcast.
Sure.
Well, listen, Don, appreciate it.
Oh, thanks a lot, Brian, for having me out, and thanks a lot for spearheading this new endeavor for the KGB.
I tell you, the KGB is awesome, and I appreciate the officers allowing us to do this, and we hope the whole point of this is to help our listeners make better beer.
Sure. Sounds excellent.
Thank you, Don.
Okay.
In the cool of the evening when everything is getting kind of
good. Alrighty, we're back with the KGB Radio here at the Super Bowl No. 3 Brew Inn. And I'm joined by Jonathan Gowdy. How you doing, Jonathan?
I'm doing pretty good, Brian. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great, man.
All right.
Enjoying the day. It's a beautiful day, and as we mentioned, today we're going to talk about sanitization and cleaning. We've been asking questions of different brewers, their techniques and how they clean and what do they use to clean and how do they sanitize and their input for our listening audience to help them make better beer. But before we do that, I'd like to ask you, what was your first beer you made and why did you get into making homemade beer?
Well, that's a good question. The first beer I made was a curiosity, really. It was a partial mash. I started out partial mash. I didn't even bother with all with complete extracts, but it was a partial mash red ale. It turned out pretty drinkable, actually. You know, so I was pretty happy with it. You know, that actually I was able to drink it, and it didn't make me sick or anything. So, but really the reason, the driving force behind my head getting into home brewing, actually started out before I went to Germany. I had kicked around the idea with my best friend from high school, and went for my birthday present, he got me a homebrew kit.
Yeah.
Well, that was great. So he got me the extract version of Shiner Bock, which I thought was the bomb at the time.
And what kind of beer were you drinking around that time, before you were making homemade beer?
I thought I was snobby. I'd drink a couple of Shiner Bocks, and then I'd switch to Busch Tall Boys. And, that would be pretty much it. I'd have good tasting beer to the beginning, I thought, and I'd switch to the lower class beer just to be frugal. But anyway, that's what I thought I was doing at the time. So anyway, I had this partial mash extract batch sitting in my sitting in my closet for, well, I guess a year and a half before we moved to Germany. So I packed it all up. I didn't throw anything away, of course. I thought, okay, this is still a hobby that I want to pursue someday.
Right.
So
now, why'd you move to Germany? I mean, was it a job related or?
Yeah, the entire service department quit within a week, so I had to come and, like, you know, take the place of three guys.
Okay.
Yeah, so I pretty much moved
work
over
related,
into hell.
Yeah.
Yeah, I moved over into hell. And the basis behind that story was that the service department all quit. They were moving service guys from Houston over there for about 2 weeks at a time.
Right.
And then, I'm sorry, 2 months at a time. And then they said they were going to do that with me. I just recently got married, so I said, screw that. We moved me and my family over there. We'll live there for a year.
While you were in Germany, you were able to experience some good beers there then, huh?
Yeah, absolutely, but I didn't realize how good they were.
Uh-huh.
And, that's the whole
while
thing.
You were there.
Yeah, I thought Shiner Bock was the bomb when I went over there, and I lived in Düsseldorf, and Düsseldorf
boy,
had alt beers.
Oh, man.
Yes, and I drank alt beers like crazy. And I went to Bavaria a lot. I did a lot of work in Munich, and so of course I had to drink all of the weird and unusual sweet styles there. And as a result, I didn't realize that my tastes were changing. So anyway, we get back to the U.S. and I'm looking forward to my first Shiner Bock, and I get my six pack, and I crack open my first bottle. I'm like, oh. There's something wrong with this bottle.
Uh-oh.
So I was like, okay, well, maybe there's something wrong with that bottle. Maybe the cap was loose or something. So we try our second bottle. And, well, next thing you know, I realize the Shiner Bock really wasn't that good anymore. And so I go on an empirical search for good beer. Well, empirical search for good beer means that I'm paying $3 a bottle for Polliner and such. So,
right.
You know, that's a magnetic attraction. I come back to home brewing, and I'm lured to Ken's place. And
so it really got to an economics issue, didn't it?
Essentially, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly. But then after the economics was a driving force behind it. But after I started learning how to make it better and better and better, I'm making better beer than I can buy. So, like...
Yeah.
Why should I buy beer anymore?
Yeah, and it's funny because that's a very similar thing that I went through. I thought, okay, when I had my first child, and my wife and I, she stopped her job, she stopped working. We were on one income instead of two. She was a stay-at-home mom. Let's find ways to cut back on expenses, and one of the ways was, okay, well, make homemade beer. And it's kind of ironic because it actually makes you want to drink better beer.
Absolutely.
It makes you buy six packs that cost twice as much as a Budweiser six pack. So you find yourself spending a lot more money in the hobby and the craft beers out there. But that's just. But you don't drink as much.
Yeah, it's not the quantity.
It's not the quantity, and it really changes your way of drinking alcohol beverages or beer.
Speaking of good beer, what say we crack open this bottle of Omegang Hennepin here?
Oh, wow. Now, where did this come from?
Actually, I got this. This is a reserve. I found the Kirkwood specs. There's only a few left. They used to sell this here in Houston. This bottle probably seen better days, but it's still a very tasty brew. I don't think this beer could go bad. So.
Now, this is a... what style beer is this?
This is a Saison.
This is a Saison. Saison is a Belgian style beer?
Yeah, it's a Belgian farmhouse ale, they call it. It's they're made with artisanal water. They pull up from the depths of the from the depths
thousands
of the world.
Of feet
yeah,
or
exactly.
Something.
But actually, this particular style is not brewed in Belgium. It's only brewed. It's brewed in New York.
Okay,
New York.
But it emulates the style.
Absolutely.
From Belgium.
Absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's interesting. Let me smell it. Of course, our listening audience, unfortunately, you can't appreciate this right now like we can, but
right on.
We'll try to let you guys know what we're drinking. The color, actually, is kind of like, it's a little hazy. I would say it's maybe an orangish yellow.
Yeah, slightly hazy, yellow-orange,
just
right?
A slight amber. Nah, not quite amber, but the head is very frothy on mine. You didn't get
right,
much head.
Right, I poured a little faster, but yeah,
a bright, brilliant white head.
Fluffy white head, absolutely. Pillowy white. That's what I always call it, pillowy white.
My first impression is little citrusy. I get butterscotch. I get some butterscotch in there.
Mm-hmm.
There's not too much hops
fruity.
There.
It's
yeah,
not real fruity.
It's definitely fruity. Not too much hops there. It's a definitely unique beer. Now, when they make a Saison in the style itself in the grain bill, is there what comprises the grain bill of a Saison?
Well, Saison has a good portion of wheat, but really for a Saison, the style itself, the little that I know about it, I haven't made too many of these, but they are very dependent on the choice of yeast strain that you use, and also they're actually pretty assertively hopped.
Doesn't really tell.
I know,
you can't
tell.
Taste it, yeah,
but
you can't tell.
It adds to the overall spiciness of the character of the beer.
It almost has almost like a honey flavor, almost like a mead. Like
maybe because it's aged a bit, too. So maybe the hops kind of taking a little more subtle role in a whole flavor profile.
Well, that would make sense.
Right.
That would make sense. Well, okay, Jonathan.
Like,
as far as joining the KGB. When did you join the KGB and why?
Well, joining the KGB, I guess, of course, again, we're talking, going back to money, the driving force was perpetuating the 10% discount at the brew stop here. So I went ahead and said, okay, well, $20 to go ahead and say I get 10% forever. Okay, that's cool.
Right.
And so, yeah, of course, that was the driving force behind it. But then, I come to the meetings and I meet a whole bunch of brewers, and, you know, these are just guys that I can hang out with and have fun. So that's it. The rest is history, really.
That's right. It's always fun to hang around with people when you're talking about homemade beer or making beer and beer styles and all that, and somebody actually wants to listen to you.
Absolutely. Well, as our RC, I'm sure you interviewed earlier, he's the prime example of learning to make good beer fast. The only way you can make good beer fast is to hang out with people that make good beer.
That's right.
That's the way to do it, and that's what the KGB is all about.
Well, when you started, when you joined the KGB, have you seen not just the benefits of the 10% discount, but as far as the beer itself that you're making? Are you making better beer now, or did you see that transition happening before or after? Or?
Well, that's another good question you asked there. I think it all started out with my joining the KGB, and I made my first red ale and the first few batches after that, and they tasted pretty palatable. So then I talked to my friends here, and they start suggesting I get into this beer class that they're starting to host as being taught by our comrade John Donaldson. And so I get into the beer class, and I start learning more and more and more about making beer, and suddenly I'm learning enough to be dangerous, and all my beer sucks. And so it sucked for like 2 months, and I couldn't hardly even drink anything I made. But then I learned even more to circumvent my becoming dangerous to myself, and so then actually my beer started tasting better, and once I learned more about my flavor, what I liked about beer, then it's been history ever since. And again, like I say, I drink better beer at home than I can buy. So.
And Jonathan, you set for the BJCP certification program. You took the test, what, last year?
Twice.
Yeah. Twice. You're crazy, but... We're going to have a discussion on BJCP, Beer Certification Program, in the future. But what that entails is sitting down to take an exam, and it covers vast... You don't know what it's going to cover, but
no,
it covers...
It's random.
It's a random, but you got to really know not only the beer styles, but examples of the beer styles and the process of making beer, and specifically the ingredients and history of beer. So when you sat down for your first one, your first test that you took, just give you some comments on that, and currently you did get a score to where you're certified.
Yeah,
the first
national
one. Now you're national because of the second one, but the first one, get some comments of that.
Yeah, the first one scared the hell out of me, of course, because I knew it was essay going in, but I've heard horror stories, you know, from the people that I was taking the class with that had done it before, but I had no idea what I was up against before we got till they handed me the test, and I sit down like, oh my god, you know, compare and contrast an Irish red ale with a Bohemian Pilsner, and then, you know, throw in an Irish stout or something in there, and then you have to throw in the style guidelines and all these numbers and everything else that they're asking me for. So yeah, I pretty much I went into writer's cramp about page 7. You know, I was trying to write with both hands. I might as well have been using crayons after a while because, I mean, it was so difficult. My hand, you know, it was really difficult. But anyway, I did 11 pages on my first exam. See, 14 pages on my second, and I believe 13 on my third.
So, that's good. That's good.
That's just the essay portion. And, you know, the tasting. Of course, the whole time you're writing this essay portion, you're trying to go through all these questions. Then they start throwing beers in your face and, you know, making you drink. I mean, you got to go back and review them and everything else. So this is all completely distracting. I mean, once you get back from reviewing this beer, you got to go back and do your test. Like, oh, what was I thinking?
Right.
So
right.
Yeah, it's a difficult test. It's not for the faint of palate. That's for sure.
Well, congratulations to you, though. Thank I you. Mean, that's something that you had to go that you went through, and you have something to show for it. You
know, oh yeah.
I haven't sat down and taken the exact, but I've gone through the process to learn. I understand, you know, it's a very difficult test, so...
We're considering putting together a national-level certification program this year.
That'd be great. That would be really, really good.
Not 07. I mean, I'm going to start getting ready this year, but I'm going to start from January 07.
Oh, that's great. In fact, that'd be another offshoot for a podcast for somebody.
Cool.
To do, so... Oh, we're actually sitting down here, supposed to be talking about sanitization and, and cleaning. So let me ask you, how do you clean your equipment? Why do you clean your equipment? And how do you sanitize your equipment?
Well, I've been told I'm probably one of the more anal brewers here in the KGB, but not more so than some of the farm rangers that I've talked to. I'm really anal about sanitation. I've got to wash and sanitize everything. You know, I use PBW almost exclusively for my washing.
Yeah, we've heard about PBW.
Pretty much, you know, whenever I sanitize kegs, you know, I put the PBW in there. I make sure I fill the keg all the way up with the wash and warm water.
That'd be cleaning, or that'd be sanitation?
Cleaning. Yeah, not sanitizing. Yeah, you can't sanitize until after you clean, you know, and get a really good clean. It's just sanitizing and cleaning, right?
Right. Right.
So yeah, after you get the PBW and the dip tubes, you know, I invert my kegs myself. Let the wash get good around the seals and everything on the top part of the keg.
Make sure it touches everything.
Absolutely. Right. And then invert the keg again, and then and you know, set it right side up, and then use that to purge into your next keg.
Right.
Then after the wash cycle, there, of course, you do a couple 3 rinse cycles. And then after you rinse your equipment thoroughly, then I use iodophore for sanitizing. I designated concentration, but I looked for kind of a burnt orange color, not really a burnt orange, but I just look for like a beer bottle orange color, pretty much
right.
I think
the instructions actually call for a capful per 5 gallons.
Right, but that's too little, I think, I believe. I like to do a little higher than that. And there's even been a study that's been conducted on, you know, the taste of iodophore residual flavors and stuff like that.
Right,
and
it
can't be detected in the finished product in small concentrations that you get from sanitizing.
Right.
So definitely no rinse is the way to go with iodophore.
Now, Jonathan, do you use chlorine at all?
No,
you don't use chlorine at all?
No, I don't use chlorine at all.
Okay.
If I'm doing something crazy, like switching from like a lambic or wild fermentation back to a normal fermentation, I'll ramp the temperature up over like 180, 190 degrees with warm water inside the carboy and really, really warm it up. But that's really the only time I ever do anything weird. I mean, other than that, I use it strictly PBW and iodophore.
Do you ever use boiling water?
Yes, I do, but that's what I'm saying. That's how I do what I was talking about earlier. Whenever I'm going from a wild fermentation to a normal fermentation,
just boil the heck out of it and then
yeah,
put it in there.
Well, I'll put a foundation of warm water in the bottom, and I'll start increasing it up to boiling slowly, because you can't just dump boiling water in a cold carboy.
Right.
You know, that'd probably be pretty bad.
That wouldn't be too good. I mean,
right.
That's one of the worst things that ever happened is you spent 6 hours making a great beer, and all of a sudden the carboy breaks.
Yeah, that'd be
that would be horrible. Of course, you know.
I've been fortunate enough to have that happen yet.
Have you really?
Yeah, fortunate.
You know what, John Donaldson, which is an excellent home brewer and a KG beer, that's actually happened to him one time in his bedroom, and it went all over the carpet, and it was an absolute mess.
I believe it. And
I cannot even imagine that. So, well, Jonathan, thank you for your time, and also thank you for the Hennepin.
Absolutely.
Very good saison. Very, very enjoyable. And anyways, that is the end of our conversation today on sanitization, and I appreciate everybody listening to our podcast, KGB Radio. Thank you very much for coming back, and by all means, please go to and add a comment at thekgb.org or at kgbradio.blogspot.com. Thank you.
Thank you.
Whoa, that Jonathan sure can't talk, can he? Appreciate those two gentlemen spending time with me. I really enjoyed it. I want to thank also Tim White and current czar Ed Condon, as well as General Secretary Peter Rosales. Thank you very much, guys. Well, next episode, I'm trying to put together some interviews of our local homebrew shops. Currently, I don't have a topic. My intent is to have a topic all three can talk about and give you some tips and techniques, as well as a little plug for each establishment. Well, that is a wrap. Again, KGB Radio is here to help you make better beer. If you have any show suggestions or comments, please send those comments on our website, kgbradio.blogspot.com. Again, thank you for listening. Cheers.